Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Guten Tag, mein Freunden. Hi there, guys. It's Jonathan Strickland from Tech Stuff, and I am joined with my wonderful co-host in this great endeavor we call a podcast. That co-host is...
Lauren Vogelbaum. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm just fine.
I have zero German for you aside from Vogelbaum, which means bird tree, by the way.
Okay, so we've already learned something, and we haven't even gotten onto our topic yet. Today we wanted to talk about digital pets. This actually comes to us courtesy of a listener suggestion. And digital pets, virtual pets, this is an idea that really kind of got its heyday in the 90s, especially in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to talk a little bit about the rise of digital pets and then the fall of digital pets and sort of some other surrounding topics that tie into this.
What all of this digital pet malarkey means.
Yeah, exactly. And before we get into specifics, I want to talk a little bit about some general features that you would expect in a virtual pet. Now, first of all, it's virtual. It's not an actual living thing.
Oh, right. It's sometimes called digital pets rather than virtual pets because, you know, they don't necessarily have to be. I mean, there are web applications that where digital pets live, but some of them are physical three-dimensional objects.
Yep. And so we've been very loose with our definition in the sense that we feel there are some toys and products out there that have influenced the process of virtual pets and the evolution of virtual pets. So some of the stuff we're going to talk about today, they aren't really a virtual pet in the strictest definition, but it's important as far as the development goes. In general, a virtual pet tends to have certain features that let it seem kind of similar to an actual real life pet. For instance, it usually will respond to you calling for it. There's some sort of command that you use to call it, whether it's vocal or it's a button you press on a game controller, mm-hmm. or on a little physical device that brings it to you.
Mm-hmm. You have to care for it. You have to feed it and clean up after it. If it falls sick, you have to take care of it.
Right. Usually you can train it to do various things. It may be to perform a trick, or it might be to eviscerate someone else's virtual pet in the case of certain games that we'll cover.
Right.
Also, there's usually some form of way to reward the pet, either with treats or toys. Sometimes the element that allows you to give treats or toys is an extra element within the whole virtual pet where that you pay real money to get access to virtual treats.
Right, right. Yeah. Lots of these virtual pets are a one-time purchase kind of thing. You either buy the hardware or you pay for a subscription, for a life subscription, and you get that thing for, you know, as long as you care to play with it. And others are, a monthly subscription, or you have to continue buying into various little accessories and other products in order to continue.
Yeah, yeah. You're really building out the pet's life. It's very similar to the way a lot of games are running now, where you have an in-game purchase to give your character either a different look or sometimes an actual advantage in gameplay. Many of those ideas really got their start in the virtual pet world. Also, they usually have some sort of a feature there that allows you to have your pet meet other pets.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. That's a relatively, I guess, relatively recent as of, you know, say 2005, but...
Yeah.
But...
Right. The earliest ones...
It was a development.
Exactly. The earliest ones didn't necessarily have that feature in them. You couldn't get some pets to meet other pets until we started to build in that capability, either in the hardware or in the software. But it usually meant that you could have your pet make friends with another person's virtual pet. Sometimes you could have your virtual pets breed, and then you would get little tiny versions of your virtual pet that would have features of both the mommy and the daddy virtual pet.
Jonathan Strickland explaining how the birds and the bees.
The virtual birds and the virtual bees work. Look, when a virtual dog and another virtual dog virtually love one another, it's very special. They trade some code, and then you get a virtual puppy. Yeah, anyway, these are all basic features that you would find in virtual pets. So that's sort of the overall kind of definition. But to really understand the development, we have to go back a ways. And Lauren, you had an interesting place you wanted to start.
Yeah, I want to talk about Pet Rocks. I think that would be a very early, I mean, clearly analog, not digital, version.
That's about as analog as you get.
Of a virtual pet. Those debuted in 1975 at $3.95 a pop, which is approximately $16 in the current economy, which is actually what, say, for example, Tamagotchi cost. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
So essentially $16 in our current currency to buy a rock.
To buy a rock, yeah. Right. And this was created by Gary Dahl, who was a California ad executive.
And a brilliant one at that, apparently.
He sold more than 5 million of these critters in less than 6 months.
It's like a rock with googly eyes. So Lauren, 1975, you remember those days, right?
Oh, yeah. That was 7 years before I was born.
Okay, so I was around. 1975 was also the year a little movie called Jaws came out, a fantastic documentary. It's also when a certain Tech Stuff podcaster arrived on the scene. That would be me.
Yeah, so, not me.
So I don't really remember 1975. I just know I was there. Anyway, Pet Rocks. So there we go. There's a non-living pet. And it was mostly a gag gift kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
But it lays the groundwork for this idea of a pet that's not really alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also wanted to point out, actually, that in 1977, that was when K-9 debuted on Doctor Who, which I think
nice.
Is also probably an important reference in the entire... I mean, especially if you've seen an Ibo, I think that they're pretty...
That obviously inspired by the K-9 bucket of bolts.
Mm-hmm. So the idea about this kind of, and I mean, of course, in science fiction, stuff like this has been talked about for, you know, since the days of Asimov's robot
series.
Stuff
sure.
series
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Icing the Body Electric, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, do androids dream of electric sheep? Mm-hmm. So these are, again, the building blocks that will lead to virtual pets. In 1985, a company called Worlds of Wonder introduced a toy that was, depending upon how you played with it, very entertaining or terrifying. That would be Teddy Ruxpin.
I firmly found them terrifying as a child,
so,
actually.
Teddy Ruxpin, it was an interesting idea. It was a toy that would read, quote-unquote, read stories to children. The stories would be on a cassette tape.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you may not know what a cassette tape is. I remember them. But a cassette tape, all right, so it's magnetic tape. And usually, like on a regular audio cassette tape, you have two tracks on either side of this tape. And it's usually used for stereo.
Mm-hmm.
One track's for the left speaker and one's for the right. Now with Teddy Ruxpin, instead, one track was audio. And the other track was a series of directions for the
animatronic limbs.
Teddy bear. Well, it's really just the mouth.
Oh, okay.
The limbs didn't really move.
Okay.
But the mouth would move in time with whatever was playing. So that way, it would follow the directions and seemingly talk to you and read out the story. This meant that if you wanted to do something a little wacky, like, I don't know, put your Black Sabbath cassette tape in Teddy Ruxpin, he would not suddenly start rocking out. Because the mouth, there were no directions for the mouth to follow.
Okay, so the mouth wouldn't move. He would still play.
Oh no, you could
the
play.
Black Sabbath
you
tape.
Could play Black Sabbath through a Teddy Ruxpin. There's nothing stopping you. You essentially have a Teddy Ruxpin shaped boombox, but it wouldn't like start screaming out.
Okay, well that's.
You know?
I guess that's. I mean, I'm. You know.
Lord knows I tried. But yeah, that was, again, Teddy Ruxpin, not a virtual pet necessarily, not in the same sense that we're talking about, but again, lays the groundwork. This idea of a synthetic creature providing some form of companionship.
And that appears to be autonomous.
Right, right. And again, very loose allusion in this case. You pick up pretty quickly that it's following a very specific script, which was based upon whatever was on that cassette. Worlds of Wonder, by the way, ended up going bankrupt, I think, in 1990. The ownership of Teddy Ruxpin has passed through several hands, including Hasbro. So it was one of those toys that kept on going even after the company that launched it went away. Now, the next year, in 1986, we get our first actual virtual pet. And this was for a computer platform called the Macintosh. So, 2 years after the Macintosh launches, remember they had that amazing 1984 commercial that was
in
the Super Bowl, that really amazing, one of the best commercials ever made, in my opinion. I never owned a Macintosh, but I loved the commercial. Anyway, the Macintosh program Puppy Love debuts in 1986. It's a Tom Snyder Productions release. And Puppy Love was essentially a little animated puppy dog that you could play with on your Macintosh. Very limited features on
mm-hmm.
that. But it, again, was one of the first examples of a virtual pet. Now, we go ahead a year to 1987, and the Nintendo Entertainment System gets a release of a Japanese role-playing game, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation. I apologize to Lauren, who actually knows how to pronounce Japanese words, but Megami Tensei. Was the RPG, and it included a gameplay element where you could capture demons, and then you could train those demons to fight for you, so that you could use the ones that you've captured to help protect you in other battles.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gameplay element that we would end up seeing used in other types of virtual pets in the future.
And in lots of other games as well. I wouldn't necessarily count something like Pokemon as a virtual pet application, but
but it definitely has that gameplay
definitely
element.
Definitely has that element,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I include Pokemon mostly because, again, it has some elements of a virtual pet. Although, if you're mostly looking to try and maximize your group of Pokemon so that you can have the best chance of winning any particular
mm-hmm.
battle, that's not a great message for a person who wants to own a real pet.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I
a
feel
Michael
like,
Vick message.
That is not what the ASPCA, I think, would want to.
Right. But then again, virtual pets let us do these sort of things. I mean, these are all cartoony, like Pokemon are these cartoony creatures that don't necessarily have a a counterpart in real life.
Sure.
Some of them are obviously modeled after real animals, but others, if it's modeled after a real animal, I have not seen it.
Yeah, I don't think I want to see some of the real animals that those things are modeled on.
Right. Well, then in 1992, we had the game Dragon Quest V, Hand of the Heavenly Bride, and that also allowed players to capture monsters and use them to fight in their battles. So again, that same sort of gameplay element. It was starting to become pretty popular. It was an interesting idea. But it's still not really a virtual pet in the sense that we think of, where it's just really the whole purpose is to take care of an artificial creature.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1995, a company called PF Magic hits the scene and releases a program called Dogs. That's D-O-G-Z. They would, a year later, release Cats, C-A-T-Z, and then eventually release Pets, P-E-T-Z. And this was really where the virtual pet idea started to blossom,
mm-hmm.
where we started to see some of those elements we talked about at the top of the show,
mm-hmm.
the things that really make a virtual pet what it is.
And was this what kind of platform was it?
Windows, originally.
Windows?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
It was
okay.
Originally a Windows-based thing. So if you... For those of you who remember Windows back in 95, there were people who would have, like, this little dog would wander onto your screen and start to play with your cursor and things like that. It was very cute. And but this was an actual full program where you would be able to adopt a puppy or later on a kitten. And after a few days of real time, so, you know, you check on your little puppy or kitten each day, after a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days, the puppy or kitten would grow into a fully formed adult version of whatever animal it was, and you would continue taking care of it. So you would play with it, you could train it, and you could even breed your animal with other animals, starting with, I think it was Pets 3, because, you know, they released updates
mm-hmm.
As they built out the game.
Mm-hmm. Locally on your own computer, I assume? Or was this over...
Email.
Email?
You could email a copy of your pet to someone else, and you would still keep yours. This is like you suddenly cloned your pet, right?
Uh-huh.
But you could email a copy of your pet to someone else, and then they could say, oh, this doggy's very cute. Fifi's gonna love him, and see if Fifi and the other dog would, you know, have little puppy love going on.
Oh, no.
And then you end up with a litter of virtual puppies.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like you do. That's
like it happens. Yeah. So originally these were all, designed on hand-drawn, kind of designs. Like that's the line drawing style.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So they weren't photorealistic. Or anything like that, but it's
pretty cartoony. Yeah,
cartoony. But it meant that if you wanted to, you could actually really tweak the look of your pet,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't outside the realm of most people's abilities to go and draw in a new shape for their pet's body or a different coloration. But eventually, as time went on, and we'll get back into the timeline in a minute, but by 2006, the company had abandoned the line drawing approach and went for a more quote unquote realistic look, where you could end up changing textures, but you couldn't remodel your pet. It was going to always be the same basic shape.
Right, right.
But you could tweak it a little bit, just not as much as you could in earlier versions of the program.
Yeah.
But this is where we see the idea of the virtual pet really take off. And it ended up being fairly popular, a few million copies sold. So not like a crazy success, but it showed that there was a market there,
mm-hmm.
that people were interested in getting a virtual companion. Kind of a weird idea at the time. Some would say a weird idea today, that it's not necessarily something that has gained widespread acceptance.
I don't know, but there's as we will talk about later, there are certainly enough different models of this kind of thing out there that there's, you know, and they've done medical research about stuff, you know, people who are perhaps lonely and don't have so much access to as much human interaction as they need. There are lots of robots meant for keeping people companion.
Yeah, in fact, we'll talk a little bit about them. I have some information about one of those robots, but we'll save that for toward the end of the discussion,
yeah.
Because that really, it ends up building on a lot of these concepts we're talking about early on. And we're about to tackle the biggest name, I think, as far as virtual pets go. It's the name I always think of whenever I think of virtual or digital pets. But before we get into that, let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Okay, now, Lauren, when I say digital pet, is there a particular brand name that leaps to mind?
Tamagotchi.
There you go. Tamagotchi. Launched by Bandai in 1996.
1996 in Japan, that is correct. And from what I understand, Tamagotchi is the correct spelling. I always heard it as Tamagotchi when I was a kid, but I think that that's probably just because we had no idea what we were talking about.
It's an Americanized pronunciation.
Sure, sure. The word does come from a portmanteau.
Oh, okay.
Of the words tamago, which mean egg in Japanese, yeah. Yes. And the English word...
I'm familiar with it from sushi.
From sushi, yes. Well, in sushi, it's usually meant to meant as a shortened form of tamagoyaki, which is that sweet egg omelet, but...
Look at the brain on Lauren. Wow, she did not know I was going to say sushi either. All right. Okay, so tamago, what's the other one?
And the English word watch, which when you kind of translate into the Japanese foreign loan word alphabet, katakana, sounds a lot more like oachi.
All right, so it's egg watch.
Yes.
Which I would immediately assume would be an egg timer. Not a digital pet.
Not at all.
But no. It is a digital pet.
But they were egg shaped, and
yes.
And they did the origin of these little creatures would look like a little egg.
Right.
So
you would go out and you would buy this essentially looked like a keychain that had an egg shaped plastic case there with a little screen on it.
Little LCD, yeah.
Yeah, and that would allow you to hatch your your digital pet.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little egg on there that you would have to, press a button, which essentially started a timer that would let the Tamagotchi know, hey, there's a player, it's time to start creating a pet for this person to interact with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would end up using, I think it was like 3 buttons.
Yep, it's a little 3-button interaction.
So you would use those 3 buttons to do various commands depending upon what your pet needed and whether or not you were a good person. Because it would be things like, feed your pet or clean up after your pet, because they would leave little digital poos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They would get very upset if you didn't. And I say all this hypothetically because I never actually owned one. Did you ever actually own?
I didn't own one.
Did you mistreat someone else's Tamagotchi?
I'm taking the 5th. Mostly because I can't remember.
Excellent.
No, I'm not the kind of guy who would ever. I can't mistreat creatures in a video game, right? Like if there's a video game. All right, tangential. I apologize for the tangent, but this is an example of how I think.
Mm-hmm.
The game Red Dead Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing a cowboy in the waning era of the cowboy era, right? This is the end days. The train is taking over. The cars are starting to happen. So the day of the cowboy is at an end. There's an achievement you could get for killing all the buffalo in the game. There was a certain number of buffalo, and after you killed a certain number, you would get this achievement.
Okay.
That was the last achievement I got because I could not bring myself.
You felt bad for the buffalo?
For the
digital buffalo.
That's
very sweet.
We'll get into the discussion about that, about actually developing an emotional attachment to a digital creation, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. Like just from crazy from the sense of, that's so, I would never have imagined it until it happened.
Mm-hmm, sure. I don't know. I mean, as a kid, I had a whole stable full of My Little Ponies. Okay. I was that guy
right.
When I was like 6 and they all had very individual personalities and I was extraordinarily attached to these toys.
Well,
so, I mean, just building on that, if those things didn't move except my imagination. So
right. Sure.
I can see how something that does move to a certain extent does. I mean, that being said, in Fable, I'm the guy who kicks all the chickens, so I,
well,
you
okay,
know.
Yeah, I've
but they're annoying.
I've kicked a chicken or two, you know.
Haven't
also,
we all?
Also, it's very possible, Lauren, that some of our listeners out there could be bronies, and maybe they also have their own collections that could rival your own childhood one.
They probably could.
By the way, I'm not speaking down to anyone who likes My Little Pony. That was created the latest version, My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic, was created by the same people who created Powerpuff Girls, which I love.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, so no judgment here.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting back to Tamagotchi.
But anyway, yeah, yeah.
So you could feed them, you could clean up after them. If you didn't clean up after them, they could actually get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have to really take care of them. And also, Tamagotchi, unlike a lot of other digital pets, the digital pet in Tamagotchis could die.
Yeah, yeah.
If you didn't take care of them.
Or I think in the American version they sort of turned into little digital angels and kind of flew back to their home planet because
yeah.
They were aliens.
Or they went into a little digital UFO and flew away. But
mm-hmm.
But the point was that if you didn't take care of them, they would leave. And in fact, that became something of a problem because you had to take care of them about twice a day.
Sure, and in the early stages, way more often than that, about once every 6 hours or so, I think.
So, yeah, you've got this thing, and it could make noise. It would beep at you when it was really not doing so well or not happy. Happy being a weird term because we're talking about following a certain protocol, which meant that kids would have to whip these things out and take care of them throughout the day, even if they were in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which became a problem in the United States, certainly.
Yeah, and so in the U.S. you had stories of schools that would ban these things outright and say, don't bring them to school because they are a distraction, you're not learning, you are instead paying attention to a little digital pet, and you need to have your attention directed toward your schoolwork. And in fact, a lot of sources that I've read have essentially credited the fact that the United States school systems often outright banned these things for the downfall of the virtual pet industry in the U.S., that virtual pets, digital pets didn't really become as big a deal as they could have because the school systems banned them. So there you go. I mean, Tamagotchi, what not only was the genesis of the digital pet craze, but in the United States at least, was also the death of it. but moving on, there are other ones to talk about besides Tamagotchi. Also, in 2005, they updated the line because it had pretty much gone forgotten, but there were a lot of people who had nostalgic fondness for the Tamagotchi line.
Well, it never really went away, actually. There have been several generation updates here and there. I mean, they were still pretty big in Japan, from what I understand.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
They came back with an infrared connector port.
Yeah, the Tamagotchi connection. This is what allowed the Tamagotchi version to have interactions with other people's Tamagotchis.
Right.
Because before it was pretty much just, you know, your pet was confined to
its own egg.
Yeah, to its own egg. That was the extent of its universe. But then with the infrared feature, it would allow your pet to visit other pets. And it could get out of the egg once in a while.
And eventually, around 2011, 2012, Tamago, which introduced these little separate figures that you could plug into your Tamagotchi, those were introduced, and also Tamatown, which was a website thing, which as of February 6th, 2013, has shut down.
So again, the struggle for the digital pet continues. I just want to mention some of the characters that you could have in Tamagotchi. Keeping in mind, your digital pet would go through stages in its life. So there'd be a young stage, teen stage, and then an adult stage. So these kind of apply to different stages. But you could have Maruchi, which was a spoiled brat who would like to roll around a lot. Kinakamochi, which liked to jump around a lot, and the picture I saw of it had a giant bump on its head with a little bruise mark. So apparently that's
cute.
Not very safe when he jumps around. Mm-hmm. There was Ichigochi, who was a dancing maniac.
Mm-hmm.
There was Mimichi, which was apparently the most popular of all the Tamagotchis. Supposedly had a genius IQ of 200
wow.
and loved math and writing. There was Tarakochi, who was naughty, impatient, and chatty. And Gozaruchi, who wants to be a ninja.
I like your Japanese pronunciation.
Arigato. Don't touch my mustache.
But yeah, so, you know, as of the height of their popularity, they are supposed to have sold 1 per second in Japan.
And, that's crazy.
Over 78 million sold as of 2013.
Yep.
So certainly think also recent news for Tamagotchi. As of Valentine's Day this year, 2013, to celebrate 16 years of business, the company announced a free Android app called Tamagotchi Life, which stands for Love is Fun Everywhere.
Of course it's an acronym. It can't just be Tamagotchi Life.
No, that would be ridiculous.
Don't be silly.
So Tamagotchi lives on.
Wow. All right. Well, moving on to some of the other virtual pets.
Because around the same time, you know, everyone was, I mean, this was such a craze that everyone had to jump on.
Yeah. There were some people who criticized Bandai, saying that the Tamagotchi really catered more to a female audience and not to boys.
Which is where Digimon came in.
Digital monsters released by Bandai, Digimon. Similar life cycle to Tamagotchi, but they were also designed so that you would raise them, train them, and battle them with other people's Digimon. So there you go. There's the boy, right? So apparently girls want to nurture and raise a pet, and boys want to train a killer monster.
I don't know. If I could get a really cute little Tamagotchi and fight it with other really cute Tamagotchi, that sounds like the best game to me,
really,
personally.
Really, really cute deadly fights?
Yes.
I have nothing to say about that.
Gloomy Bear, that would be great.
1998, we see the introduction of a toy that made people go bonkers when it came out, the Furby.
Yeah.
Now, Furby is not a digital pet in the sense of these other ones that are
software, hardware. Yeah.
This is more like a kind of a robot. So closer to the Teddy Ruxpin model than the Tamagotchi model. And the original one would speak in this language called Furbish and would gradually learn, quote unquote, learn English. It would really just incorporate English into its vocabulary over a set amount of time. But later models introduced in like 2005 and 2011 had more features that would let it converse with people. There was some voice recognition stuff that was introduced.
Mm-hmm. And they had motion sensors. They could tell when you were touching them or when you picked them up and moved them around.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there were – I remember when they came out because I remember how people went really bonkers over them.
Oh, yeah.
It's like there are certain toys that I can remember people really going crazy for. The first one I can remember with that happening would be Cabbage Patch Kids.
Sure.
So yeah, that's the classic from my childhood was Cabbage Patch Kids. And then you had things like Furby. Teddy Ruxpin actually was really popular when it first came out. Furby, another great example. And of course, there's always Beanie Babies.
Oh, right.
But getting back to virtual pets, 1999, that's when we get to a web-based virtual pet.
That's Neopets, right?
Yes, Neopets. It is a virtual pet website. So you would go in, you would create an account, you would adopt a virtual pet, and you could buy virtual items for your pet using virtual currency. And you could earn currency through participating in various things on the website, whether it was a game like a quest or something like that.
A minigame, yeah.
Or you could actually purchase virtual currency using real cold hard cash.
As many 13 to 17 year olds certainly have on the internet in 1999.
Yeah.
And this was actually created by two British students, originally just for other students. And it was picked up by a market research expert who then sold it to MTV Viacom for $160 million.
Not a bad turn there.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, and it was, they originally thought it up in 1997, but it took about 2 years of research and development to really build out the capabilities of the site, which launched in 99. And it let you customize pets. You could choose, you had like up to, I think there was something like 54 different pet types you could choose from. And then once you chose the type, you could actually customize the pet further.
Mm-hmm.
You could compete in the Battle Dome if that was your desire, or you could do little quests and games.
Mm-hmm.
And Neopets is still going.
Yeah, yeah. The last numbers I have out were from 2006, at which point it claimed over 100 million users and 150 million individual pets.
Yeah, kind of crazy.
But I think that Neopets was also one of the first ones that really incorporated advertising into, since it was web-based, it could have, you know, a McDonald's quest or you could purchase branded food or toy items for your digital toy items for your digital pet.
Yeah, originally they used banner ads on mm-hmm. their website, but then that was one of the first instances of in-game advertising
mm-hmm.
where the advertisements were worked, like you said, into the virtual world, Neopia, as I recall.
Yes.
And you could end up encountering stuff that was specifically branded for a particular company. You could even purchase stuff, like you were saying. As I recall, Neopets even got some flack for that, about the fact that they were using branded stuff within the world of Neopets. But the response was, everything that is branded is clearly marked as an ad. It's not being presented as just an element of the game.
Right. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think that part of the controversy was that for a while, you know, it would have this little tag at the bottom of a page, like, this page contains advertorial content.
Yeah.
But every page had that warning. So, you know, especially when you're dealing with young kids who don't know the differences between an ad and content,
That's not a problem just with kids.
No, you're very correct.
Yes. I'm not going to say any more sentences on that.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. and you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Let's move on to another thing that happened in 1999. Mm-hmm. My favorite virtual pet of all time. I didn't own this virtual pet, but holy cow, what a weird concept. The Sega Dreamcast releases a special game called Seaman.
Extremely special. This game, and I don't have any notes on this, so I'm just speaking from the kindness of my heart. This game was narrated by Leonard Nimoy, aka Spock.
Yes.
And,
Classic Spock, not Zachary Quinto Spock.
Right. Zachary Quinto is an entirely separate human person. So you would have this little fish thing, larva, egg, and it would spawn and kind of develop this weirdly human face.
Yes.
And it would talk back to you. It was like a little fish teenager. It would say really very angry Leonard Nimoy things at you. And the Dreamcast, if you don't remember, had a little port that you could plug various things into on the controller.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in this case, a microphone. So you could talk to your Seaman.
Right. Yeah. It would actually ask you when your birthday was, and you would tell it when your birthday was, and it would give you information about other things that happened on that day in history. So you get a little trivia with your Seaman. And you were supposed to interact with your Seaman at least once a day, or else it would die. And, if you continued to interact with it, it would possibly like you, but it always was a little snarky.
It was pretty snarky.
Even if the Seaman wasn't outright hostile, it would still be a little.
Most of mine were pretty hostile, but I don't think that I took care of mine nearly as often as I should have, because they remind me of terrifying Lovecraftian horror.
I think
honestly.
Yeah, we've established what your capacity to care is already in this podcast.
So snap.
It's no surprise that your Seaman went bad. But yeah, as you would care for the Seaman, it could meet other Seamen.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible thing to say. And then they would end up spawning, and you would have evolving Seaman, where eventually it would turn into like this frog-like thing. And be
still with the creepy human face,
yeah,
though?
Yeah, still
cool.
The creepy
That's
human
great.
Face. Yeah,
That's excellent.
Fantastic. Yeah, Seaman 2 was actually released in Japan in 2007. Can't imagine why it didn't make its way over here. That was for the PlayStation 2, obviously. The Dreamcast was long
defunct
dead by 2007.
Yeah.
Sad about that. We'll have to do a full episode about the Dreamcast,
yes,
at one point.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it would, you know, that's kind of a crazy virtual pet thing. It was weird because it had an attitude. I mean, it wasn't like cute and cuddly. It was weird to look at, and it acted in a very bizarre way. So it was like, how do you nurture something that is that unusually, the appearance is unusual, and then its behavior is inexplicable.
Also, I don't have any children, but I suspect that if I do, none of them will sound quite so much like Leonard Nimoy right off the bat.
Yeah, probably not. You have to really train them for that. So the next I have, I mean, there are other virtual pets that came out around that era, but 2005 was the next fairly big success. That was when Nintendo released Nintendogs.
Right, yeah. Was that originally for the DS?
It was for the DS, yeah. Nintendo Gusso. I butchered that one. I was so confident going in, and then it just fell apart as it was leaving my lips.
Ah, close enough.
Anyway,
probably.
So yeah, you use the touchscreen interface and the actual built-in microphone on the DS to interact with your virtual dog.
Mm-hmm.
So you could give it commands verbally, and it would follow them. Well, if it was a well-behaved dog, it would follow them. Well-trained dog, it would follow them.
You would have to scold it if it did not.
Right. And you could link the DS with other DSs. So if other people had Nintendogs, you could, you know, have your dog visit other dogs. So,
mm-hmm.
Again, it really went back into this whole model that we were talking about. And there are other examples as well. You had one that was an upcoming example.
Yeah, there's, well, you know, there's still a lot of web application virtual pets out there. Webkins are tremendously popular. These are stuffed animals that have little access codes. So you go online and you interact with a digital version of your stuffed animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty ingenious and evil, actually, because it sells, not only virtual accessories for this thing, but when you buy physical accessories for your physical toy, you can plug the codes into the internet and get virtual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Too, so it's terrific marketing, actually. Stuff like that, Foo Pets, Subeta, back in 2006 was a big thing. I may or may not come back to that later because we have an awesome note about virtual pet zombies.
Oh, right.
but the interesting one that I had, what?
Hatch.
Hatch. Thank you, Hatch. Yes, this is an upcoming iPhone app. You can sign up for the beta. It's supposed to come out spring sometime of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
We are recording this in February, and as of right now, it doesn't have a date. And as of now, if you go to the Hatch website, you can just pick which little egg you want, and it'll send you an email with a certificate of adoption. I know this because I've done this.
Oh, okay. See, mm-hmm. I don't have an iOS device that I could use with this. Otherwise, I would hope secretly that mine would turn into the Cloverfield monster. Because I love that documentary.
That is a terrific documentary. I'm
yeah.
not sure that I want to hang out with you anymore if
you
want to control the
Cloverfield. That makes two Abrams documentaries that I've mentioned in one podcast.
Well, pretty soon it's going to be hard not to mention Abrams documentaries.
That's true.
He will rule the geek universe.
Yeah, and I actually, out of all these virtual pets, the only thing that I ever owned that was similar to this, there are these toys called the Cube World Digital Stick People.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so they're these plastic cubes. They have magnetic contacts on four sides of the cube. The forward-facing side is a screen that has a little digital stick figure in it that behaves a certain way depending upon that figure's occupation or main hobby. So, for example, you might have one that has a dog, and so all the activities this stick figure does involves a dog in some way. You might have one that's an office worker or a janitor or whatever. And the interesting thing was not only would they behave a particular way within their cube, and you could pick the cube up and shake it, and that would actually make the figure fall over like there was an earthquake, or you could turn it on its side, and that make the figure slide because gravity had changed.
That's terrific.
You could also put two of these cubes together with their magnetic contacts, and then the two different stick figures could visit one
would
another.
Would interact. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like
more often than not.
Like paintings in Harry Potter?
Yeah. More often than not, they would fight, but sometimes they get along. And you could actually stack, I think it was up to, it was three or four. It might be four. I think you could stack up to four together and have in either horizontally or vertically and have them interact with each other. And then you could even make blocks of these cubes, like grab a whole bunch, and then you'd have like essentially an apartment of these little stick figures all behaving in various ways. They were pretty limited in what they would do. You could play games with them as well. Mm-hmm. The games were usually pretty limited. But it was a cute idea. And so, yeah, I had four of those. And they're a little... wacky, not terribly sophisticated compared to some of the other virtual pets we've talked about. But this has kind of led to this market of creating virtual creatures for people to have real companionship. Things like the Ludobots, which are play robots, that's artificial human companions. Mm-hmm. Things like Ibo or Pleo, the little robotic dinosaur.
Right, right.
We have an article about how Pleo works on HowStuffWorks.com. It includes pictures of a Pleo that has been slightly taken apart, I believe. It was kind of traumatic for all of us.
Oh.
Tracy actually wrote that. Our site director, Tracy mm-hmm. Wilson, wrote that article. And I remember hearing gleeful cackles and seeing lightning and hearing thunder all from her office as she was working on that article. True story. Then there's also Pero, which is a therapeutic seal robot. I saw this at, I want to say it was a CES several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I also saw it at Japan Fest in Atlanta, Georgia one year. But it's a robotic seal that's meant as a companion for senior citizens because in Japan in particular, they have a rising problem of an aging population.
Right.
People are having fewer children, which means that the population is growing older.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of population entering their senior years is growing each year. And there's a very real problem of how do you provide companionship for those people so that they have a positive outlook. And the Pero therapeutic seal robot is kind of a way of doing that. And it builds within it a lot of these concepts of the virtual pet. So it responds to you. It purrs or moves in very nice little ways. And it's an absolutely adorable robot. I mean, you look at this thing and you can't help but think.
Oh, yeah.
That looks cuddly.
Hmm.
But yeah, before we sign off, I want to talk about this zombie thing.
Oh.
I want to hear more about the zombie thing.
Right, right. So I have no idea how to pronounce this. Either Subeta or Sobeta. Yeah, it's a website thing. They had back in 2009, it was on Valentine's Day, they had a love epidemic. And when players signed on this particular Valentine's Day, they found out that every little critter in this universe had been infected by some kind of love virus, which if anyone else here has seen the documentary Stacy, which is a Japanese horror film, you will perhaps have already ideas about this. But yeah, and this virus would slowly turn these creatures into these kind of gory, undead zombie things. And people wound up really digging it. They wound up keeping their characters as zombies. You could eventually cure it by applying something called lamoricillin, which I am
wow.
I'm enchanted by. I think that is terrific. But yeah, so you know, there's a little bit of a darkness to a little dark corner there, which again, I think that I don't know, you know, some of this stuff is so cute. While I was doing research, I ran across a couple pages for the current Tamagotchi line, and I was honestly terrified by the sheer cute level. And I know that I'm not in the demographic anymore, so I get that it's not aimed at me, but
right.
But just the amount of giant eyes with sparkles in them, I was like, why do they sparkle so?
It's Niotni. That's what it is. It's Niotni. And look it up, kids.
it's all very strange to me. You know, when they were doing some initial research with Furbies up at MIT, I think that MIT helped develop the Furbies, or kids at MIT helped develop it. And so a lot of the research around it was done by those folks. But, you know, kids said that they realized that the Furby wasn't alive, but that it was a little bit alive in a Furby kind of way, not in a human way, not in an animal way, but in a Furby way.
So it was like a new definition for life, in the sense of, well, it's more than something that's inert, but it's not something that's organically living.
Right, right. And one of the Frederick Kaplan, who's worked with the IBO team at Sony in Paris, was saying that these creatures paradoxically are not designed to respect Asimov's second law of robotics, which is that a robot must obey a human being's orders. They're designed to be autonomous and to have their own goals, their own wants, their own needs,
right,
and to disobey you sometimes, because
right,
that gives
like a real
you,
pet.
Like a real pet would.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, with those behaviors, you end up developing this relationship. If it always did everything you said, that would probably become fairly boring fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that process of teaching your pet and nurturing your pet that ends up being so rewarding from an owner perspective.
Sure. There has to be a positive feedback loop of you doing something that has an impact on the pet's life and the pet therefore having an impact on yours.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, there, like we said, there's a lot of scholarship on the matter. Although, to be fair, the scholarship did kind of die down simply because the trend didn't really, you know, sustain itself in the United States anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect we'll probably see more of that. I mean, especially as you talk about the development of things like artificial intelligence, we're going to see more toys that are incorporating some form of AI in them, and they'll probably follow a lot of the same features that digital pets established.
But yeah.
So, it's an interesting subject. I mean, ultimately, these virtual pets are following fairly simple protocols. It's algorithms that have them behave a certain way. There's some quasi-randomization about when they do certain actions, but it's really pretty simple stuff.
But it's just programming, yeah. And, you know, if can we really love something that isn't alive, that can't die? You know, if mortality is a condition of life, can we love something
I think
that
Buffy,
cannot die?
The Vampire Slayer taught us that we can. And that ultimately that decision is going to hurt us. But it's okay, because it'll create a spin-off series.
That's much better than the original.
Yeah. Or at least of equivalent quality until it reaches season 4. All right, so that I think wraps up our discussion on digital pets. So guys, that was a great suggestion. It was interesting. It was something that I never would have thought to cover on my own. So
yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for that suggestion, listeners. If you have any other suggestions for topics we should cover in future episodes of Tech Stuff, please get in touch with us. You can send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both of those locations is techstuffhsw. And Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.